Hey guys, this is former WCW wrestling star Glacier and Ray Lloyd, and I just wanted to make sure that you tune in to Perched on the Top Rope before blood runs cold on you. So make sure you listen or watch. Either way, make sure you check out Perched on the Top Rope.
Welcome everyone to Perched on the Top Rope. That's right, it's me. It's the DSH Lee Walker joining me today. As you heard from that opener, we have WCW's Glacier. Glacier, how you doing today?
Hey, I'm doing good, Lee. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great, Ray. And we got some fun and exciting questions. And later on, we're going to talk about a little something that you've been putting in the works.
Yeah.
And fans, you're going to love this. Ray, now, before you were in wrestling, we know that you were in martial arts, involved with martial arts. You were part of the World Karate Association. They did these full contact tournaments and everything. And
yeah, long time ago.
The thing I found interesting the most through my research was the fact that during your time with the WKA, you'd never been knocked down, knocked out, or anything.
Yeah, you know, and that was just one of the reasons why. And of course, you and I have had some great conversations leading up to us finally getting to where we could record one of these episodes here. But, you know, I started studying martial arts when I was a kid. I was about 14, 15 years old. And, you know, like most people, my twin brother and I saw a Bruce Lee movie, and we told our dad we want to learn how to do that. And I grew up in Brunswick, Georgia. And one of the things that Brunswick is really, really known for, even to this day, is there's a huge it was a former military base. I think it was a naval base, but it was it's now the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center, where people come from all over the world actually to train in law enforcement techniques. And it's people from the U.S. Marshal Service to Border Patrol, you name it, they all train there. So when my dad went searching for some qualified instructors, that's where he found the two men that were going to be not only my instructors, but lifelong mentors and coaches and trainers and more than anything, friends, Bob Natsky and Frank Graves. And so that's where my roots in martial arts started, was I was studying with them in Brunswick. Of course, when I went to college and of course, under their encouragement, I branched out and worked or trained with other people in other forms of martial arts. My brother was really into boxing, which back, you know, if you came up in the 70s and 80s, I mean, that's when, you know, like, you know, boxing was still the big, big thing, you know, especially the heavyweights, which we loved watching. So, you know, when I got to college, I went to Valdosta State University on a football scholarship and always stayed in pretty good shape because obviously during football season, you know, we were playing, but then in off season, we had a really, really good strength and conditioning program. But, you know, as I got through my first couple years of college, I started, you know, thinking about, and I did a lot of tournaments and stuff coming up. But you know, tournament karate is, especially back then, was more semi-contact. It wasn't full contact. And so I just got to a point where I was like, you know what? Like, I feel like I'm pretty good at this, but at the end of the day, I just want to learn. I want to know. I want to learn and to find out if I can just take a punch, you know, like I want to know I can maybe take somebody's best shot, you know? And you know, that's probably the reason that one of the reasons that led me into my pro wrestling career is the fact that I tend to love contact of all kinds. But yeah, you know, I was very fortunate that right there in Valdosta, there was a gentleman named Bruce Edwards. His father was an old cut man from back in the day, from the boxing days. We actually called his father, we referred to him as Cut Edwards. And you know, and I can't remember how I actually ran into him but I remember we met in Valdosta. I think it might've been at a football game or we had a mutual friend that was at a game or something. Anyway, I was looking for a place to train cause I was away from home. And he started telling me about that. He trained these guys in full contact karate, which was just, you know, I was like a kid at Christmas when I heard that. So I went to train, started training with him. There were a lot of really good athletes that were training there. A couple guys that were bigger guys like me as well. So I had some guys to really, really test me, and I could kind of test them. And yeah. And then I started, you know, and back then the rules were you could, the kicks had to be from the waist up. And I believe back then we did, it was either 2 or 3 minute rounds, but we had to do like 6 kicks, I think, above the waist every round. So if you're a super heavyweight like I was, that's asking an awful lot, you know? So you had to get those kicks in a hurry, you know? And so what I did, yeah, I was very fortunate. I found out I could take a good punch, and I was never knocked out, never knocked down, never even got a standing 8 count. So I found out, I set out, achieved my goal to find out if I could take a punch or not.
And I mean, you won a championship in the process there too.
Yeah, I won the Southeastern Super Heavyweight title, which was really, really cool. And as you and I were talking a while back, David Barber, who has been someone I've reconnected with through social media, was the guy in kind of Georgia who was really in charge of recruiting and bringing people in and promoting. And he was world bantamweight champion back in when he fought. And so anyway, yeah, it was great competition. And I got a chance to, like I said, I got a chance to run with a little bit. And it was great because I had all my college buddies. When I would, you know, when I would have a fight, they would come and, you know, yell and scream at like idiots in the stands, you know, when it was, you know, some of my teammates and some of my fraternity brothers and stuff. So, yeah, it was. But I tell you what, it really did. It was a huge confidence builder for me because it really did allow me to test myself, you know, all out, you know, and, you know, going my best against, you know, competitors and them giving me their best. And as I joked with you a while back, what I learned pretty quick is that if I could get to about the third round, most of them got pretty gassed, and I could usually, you know, just take over after about the third round because I would just let them kind of punch and kick themselves out a little bit.
Hey, they tired themselves out. It's
yeah. It's a game plan, you know?
Yeah. So. How did you make the transition from martial arts into pro wrestling? And did you find the training for pro wrestling to be harder than martial arts, or was martial arts harder than wrestling?
I always say pro wrestling, when I trained for pro wrestling, it was the hardest thing I'd ever done in my life. And my martial arts training was very, very tough at times. My two instructors were very, very traditional in the sense of, my one instructor, Mr. Bob Natsky, was the head of physical training for the U.S. Marshal Service, the entire U.S. Marshal Service. And like, for example, like we were just like, he just turned 80 years old. We were laughing about this recently, how he would have 4 classes a day where they would run, each class would run 4 miles, and he would run with all 4 classes. So that's 16 miles a day he would be running. And still leading the pack. I mean, so him and my head instructor, Frank Graves, they were both tremendous athletes. So they very much believed in working really hard. And so back in the days when I was we'd have to hold those stances forever and I could go into just a whole hour's worth of stories about that. But my martial arts training was very, very hard. It wasn't a commercial school. You had your first month was like on a probationary period. After the first month, they let you know if you were going to be worthy to stay there and train with them. So I really, really had to earn my stripes every time I went in there. And then, of course, football, I always say martial arts helped me so much with how to control my weight and my body out on the football field. It really did. And same thing, once I got into pro wrestling, I realized there were a lot of, just because I'd already learned how to roll and all those things and the stuff that, you know, those are the basic things you learn when you start wrestling training too. So they all kind of meshed together, which was nice. But just the fact that, as I tell all of our trainees at the Nightmare Factory, you know, I really believe God did not make us to be pro wrestlers. I mean, there's no way, you know, our bodies were intended just to, you know, to throw ourselves full speed onto a, you know, a pretty hard surface over and over and over and then get thrown onto and through and over and into things. it helped me a lot. It still to this day does, because even when I'm coaching all of our trainees, there's certain things that I share with them that are things that are, you know, things that I personally can bring to the table because of my martial arts background. And it's allowed me to meet some great people along the way too. Some of my martial arts heroes and one of my best friends to this day, Ernest the Cat Miller, my tag team partner, he actually comes to our training school and actually on his own time. He doesn't get paid anything for it. He comes in and he actually works with a couple of our trainees who are trying to incorporate martial arts into their wrestling. And he comes, I mean, you can't get any better than that. Three-time world karate champion coming out and just giving of his time to help some wrestling trainees. So yeah, I kind of went a long way around to answer that question, but yeah, martial arts really did help me in football and wrestling. But yeah, hands down, as tough as football and martial arts were, wrestling, pro wrestling training and just staying in the pro wrestling industry, hardest thing hands down I've ever done. I really, really cringe when people say that, that ring is like a trampoline or, you know, you guys don't really hit each other and all that stuff. I always say, you know, that ring with a trampoline, I've been looking for 34 years. I haven't found that ring yet.
Yeah. Right.
No. Yeah. If it's out there, I haven't found it. I've looked.
Yeah. I've got the same boards that are on my deck right now that you guys land on. I'm pretty sure that that's not a trampoline.
No. it's funny. You know, I actually saw, I think it was Rudy Gonzalez, and a lot of people know Rudy in the business. He's a trainer out in Texas. I actually had a big hand in training Daniel Bryan, and he put up a couple pictures recently about how people say that, like, oh, the canvas, you know, is really super soft and all that. He put a picture of Andre the Giant and Hulk Hogan in their match, and you can see he really it's a great picture to prove his point is that, you know, Andre's not sinking into the mat at all. You know, you look at his feet, I mean, he's not. And so when people say, oh, that mat's soft and, you know, it's cushiony, trust me, it's not.
Early in your career with the NWA, you got to face the likes of the Great Muta, yeah, the Fabulous Freebirds, and as well as Kevin Sullivan, and I believe it was Wyndham in the it was Rotunda in the Varsity Club.
Yeah.
Did you get early in your career, you know, wrestling these great talents, did you ever get any advice from them, and did you use any of your martial arts in wrestling back then?
You know, I will say this, Tommy Wildfire Rich, I met him earlier in my career, really in the first year of my career. And there's a great friend of mine named Ben Masters, who was a promoter of what was called Peach State Wrestling back in the day. And he was a young promoter, but he brought in tons of great, especially legendary wrestling talent, like Bullet Bob Armstrong, Mr. Wrestling 2, Ted Oates, Tommy Wildfire Rich. And I got to meet Tommy, and he kind of befriended me, and I think I like to think he saw some potential in me. And so it was after it was the second summer. I broke in April of 87. This was the summer of 89. And he basically said, hey, look, you know, do you want to try to do some matches, you know, with NWA, you know? And I said, well, sure. You know, I mean, what was I going to say? You know? And so my very first match ever, and I've talked about this several times, I got booked for the Albany Civic Center, Albany, Georgia, against Hacksaw Butch Reed. And it really was my first experience to be in the ring with someone of that level, who was that big and that powerful and that strong, and who really, I got to see, you know, who really knew what he was doing in the ring. And because he knew what he was doing in the ring, obviously I didn't get hurt. And I've always, you know, the thing is that I rarely crossed paths with him after that. But I always, you know, it was one of those things where when I did, I always, always thanked him for just, and I know it's a match. It was just a blip on his entire career. He probably didn't even remember me, but I remembered it. And I remember the fact that he could have taken advantage of a really young wrestler, and he didn't. He actually was the ultimate professional. And word got back to Tommy that the match went well. And so they called me, and this was a Sunday night, I believe. And back then they were taping at Center Stage in Atlanta, which of course has become an iconic place for filming wrestling. They did on Wednesday night tapings, I think. So I had a few days off, and then he was like, hey, come to TV on Wednesday. So I walk into TV at Center Stage. I'm scared to death. I don't know anybody. I've only been in the business for barely 2 years. And back then, you know, everybody was good. I mean, everybody. And so I get there, and my first TV match ever was against Great Muta, you know. And of course, he was getting pushed to all heights, because this was his real first run in the state, you know, in the United States. And so in that match, I had, you know, Gary Hart managing, Great Muta wrestling, Great Muta. I had Tommy Young, legendary referee Tommy Young, and Jim Ross and Michael PSH commentating the match. So you want to talk about pressure?
Yeah. Oh man.
But yeah, you know, I'd say who helped me an awful lot back then, other than, and Tommy Rich did an amazing job. I'm still great friends with Tommy to this day. And I always thank him for everything he did to help me out early on. Tommy Young, referee Tommy Young, who's, you know, who retired not too many years after that, cause he ended up having an injury, but, he was, you know, as a referee, he really, really just, you know, he was one of those, I was always, you know, like a sponge. I was like, I wanted to listen to, you know, the people who were really good at this. I wanted to try to learn from them. And he was just like that with everybody. I mean, he was a guy that, even though, you know, and anybody that's been in the wrestling business, anybody that's a real fan of wrestling knows how truly valuable a good referee is in a wrestling match. And he was just a stand up person. He's just very professional. And he just, you know, he would talk to a bunch of us and really give us insight into, from a referee's perspective, of this is what, when you're out there and you're moving around, this are some of the things you should do. These are things you shouldn't do. You know, he was really big, you know, always on, when in doubt, play to the hard camera. You know, the hard camera is always going to get a great shot of you. And, you know, those things that seem common sense once you learn them. But back then I didn't know, you know, so, yeah. But, a lot of the, you know, a lot of that summer, I ended up getting booked for that summer tour. Back then it was called the Great American Bash Tour. And, it worked a lot with Muta Gary because we had a you know, the first match went as everything went, you know, as they hoped it would. And so, he requested, from what I understood, requested that I, you know, that I get put with Muta some more that summer, which I did. I had a couple more TV matches with him. And then I was end up working with just about everybody that summer. And, like I said, I was scared to death the whole summer, but, I came out the other end pretty much, almost unscathed, you know, except for the fact that, you know, and even though, you know, I have a great relationship, I'm a good acquaintances with Kevin Sullivan. We never ran in the same circles, but we worked together a lot in WCW, but yeah, I've always, as I told you in the past, I always never really got past the fact that Kevin Sullivan threw the, ringside stairs on me one time. So when you say anything can happen in wrestling, trust me, it can. And it usually does.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Now this is a match I would have loved to have seen. You had this match in 1994 with a particular wrestler who later on, a few years later, made it big.
Yeah.
About the same time about you came Glacier and WCW. What was it like to work with a young Rob Van Dam?
Oh, wow. Yeah. You know what? We know what was really special about that match. First of all, it was great. I mean, Rob and I have known each other for, you know, Greg Price was the one who booked that show. And ironically, the show was actually in my hometown at my high school gymnasium where I graduated high school, Brunswick High School. Yeah. And but yeah, you know, that was one of those things where, you know, Greg, I can't say for sure, but as far as I know, Greg, you know, played a big hand in kind of helping get Rob booked a lot back then. But Rob came in some on Peach State Wrestling too. And yeah, we were both, I think, about the same age, roughly within, you know, a couple years of each other, I think. And yeah, he was, you know, because we both had the common interest in martial arts. So we hit it off. You know, as far as I was concerned, we hit it off kind of right away. Same thing. We never really ran in the same circles, but we, even to this day, whenever we see each other at conventions, we always take time and just stop and chat and catch up and everything. I'm a big fan of his work, you know, like so many. But yeah, we had, as I remember, we had a great match. We had a really, really solid match. And like I said, it was equally special to me, doubly special to me, because it was at my high school gymnasium.
Oh, wow. Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I was always a big fan, and still am a big fan of Rob's work, just like I'm a fan of your work. And with the whole martial arts, with the both of you guys, with the backgrounds, and if bookers out there are listening, you can probably still book this match because I'd like to see it.
Yeah. Or maybe book us a tag together.
Yeah, book it as a tag team match. I'm cool with that too.
And, you know, I was looking through some of my old at my storage unit. I was looking through some of my old VHS tapes, and you know, that I'm trying to convert to DVD. And you know, I hadn't gone through them yet. I pulled some of them out, but I know at one time I had that match on VHS. I still had it on tape somewhere from when we did that at my school. But I'll have to look back and see if I can maybe find it, because I remember it being a very fun match. Really well. It was a good. Tough match. It was a hard match. I mean, I remember we pushed each other really well, but at the end of the day, in my opinion, it was a really good match.
Yeah. If you can find that, let me know. I'd be interested in seeing that. It's like one of those fantasy booking matches that you hear about, or that you're like, yeah, that would be an awesome match. And this one happened already. So like now I need
to see it. Yeah. And you know, that was the good thing about, you know, matches like that where, you know, when you see, you know, there was that whole group of us that came up during that time. Was Rob, there was myself, there was Disco Inferno, Scotty Riggs, Bagwell, which Bagwell got signed around 93, I think. And I signed in January 96. But yeah, there was a good group of guys that were coming up at that time. A lot of them, you know, we were coming through Georgia. And it was just really cool. Really cool to see so many of us that really, like Scotty Riggs. Scotty Riggs and I played college ball against each other in college. He played and high school ball against each other, which we didn't know that until we met in wrestling years later. Wow. But yeah, I played at Brunswick High School. He played at Benedictine Military High School, which is in Savannah. And then I played at Ballast State, and he played at West Georgia University. And yeah, so we had some you know, a lot of things in common. We didn't know until, of course, we met each other in wrestling. But yeah, you know, there's a lot. It was a good group of guys that came through, especially that early '90s. That we a good number of us ended up in you know, at the show, so to speak. You know, whether it was WCW or ECW or WWE.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah.
That's an interesting fact. Did not know that you guys, that's awesome.
Yeah, a good group of us came through together.
Yeah, wow. You know, you first became Glacier. You know, how did all of that happen? And you know, did you watch the vignettes that they put out, and how did you feel about it being, how did it come off to you?
Yeah. Well, I'll say this about the vignettes. And once again, you know, you look back, everybody can, it's so, you know, and it's such a cliche term to say hindsight is 2020, but it always good about what Dallas says. You know, Paige always says it's a cliche because it's true, you know?
Yeah.
You know, the vignettes, and I think a lot of people's opinion ran too long. I don't know why. I never was really, they never really explained to us why they ran so long before I actually debuted. I really believe that, what I believe happened was that someone in WCW, I don't necessarily think it was maybe Eric Bischoff, but I think someone just got a little antsy and they just started airing the videos, you know, when they thought it was ready, even though I could have gone out there anytime. Trust me. I was ready to go, because when I signed in January 96, I was ready. I mean, we still had to create the whole persona of Glacier. Like we started off with, followed my advice and actually hired a studio, special effects studio called AFX Studios, to create the concept of Glacier from drawing board to finished product. Andre Freitas, who was the artist with AFX, was someone that I knew and recommended. And I think he did a heck of a job. But, you know, we started off. I mean, it was really, you know, you look at a lot of what WWE does now with NXT, where it's kind of how they do things now. They find the athlete, and then they kind of find the gimmick to fit the athlete. And for me, that was kind of the case. I mean, you know, it had never really been done before at that point. This was 25 years ago now. And man, sometimes it doesn't seem like it's been 25 years, but you know, it was, like I said, breaking new ground. So I think, the concept and all that, I honestly believe that maybe there was, you know, it was a perfect sign to me with WCW as to how things were being done, that not everybody was on the same page back then behind the scenes. And, you know, and I was always the guy, like I was kind of brought up in the wrestling business is be a good hand. Don't disrupt, you know, the place, be there. Especially when I was young, it was like, even though I'd been in the business 9 years, you know, it was my first time at that level, you know, under contract. And I was basically like, you know, I'm going to come in, I'm going to keep my head down, I'm going to work hard, I'm going to keep my mouth shut. Because I already had enough heat just because of the whole Glacier thing. You know, they were like, who's this guy, you know, coming in? But yeah, I will say briefly, how it all started was, this is one of the things I tell all of my trainees, and I tell this to when I do a lot of seminars, which actually just want to say too, I'm getting back out there now. I just had hip surgery about the 19th, will be 5 months for me, and I'm feeling really good. I'm getting back in the ring. I'm definitely available to come out and start taking bookings again, and also doing seminars and talent evaluations. Obviously, most people know now that I'm a coach at the Nightmare Factory with Cody Rhodes, and known Cody, you know, for an awful long time. Worked with his dad with Turnbuckle Championship Wrestling right after my WCW days. Cody's high school wrestling coach, Steve Day, who wrestled with me in Japan and who's now in the Amateur Wrestling Hall of Fame, was Cody's coach that coached in 2 state titles. So I've known Cody for an awful long time, but very proud to be associated with him with the Nightmare Factory. But but what I tell all of our trainees and what I tell all of anybody when I do seminars is, you know, that it's a really disappointing thing that when you do all the work, you do everything you can in your power, and you think you've done everything right, and then the break still doesn't come. And unfortunately, in the rest of the business, that's a reality for a lot of people, because there's just only so many spots available, and it's a very subjective business. It's a very cliquish business. There are people that get breaks that deserve them. There are people that maybe not don't necessarily deserve the break that do get it, or at least maybe in your eyes, they don't deserve the break. But, you know, you have to look at it. I love what Cody always says. You know, you can't wish away good talent. I love that. You know, and you get, and sometimes if you, you know, the better person gets, you know, offered the deal, you know, you can't be mad at them. But my whole point to say all that is that, you know, it's a really unfortunate thing. It's a frustrating thing when you do all the work, do everything you can control, and the break still doesn't come. I've been there, trust me. But what's even more disappointing and more sad is when the opportunity is presented to you and you're not ready, only because you chose not to do the work. And then you blow the opportunity. And in the wrestling business, unfortunately, a lot of times it's what we call a one strike business. You know, if you get an opportunity like that and you're not ready for it, rarely does it come around again. You know, sometimes, but rarely, and what I've seen. So when I had the, what happened was I talked with Dallas, and Dallas is still one of my best friends to this day, Dallas Page. I call him like my crazy big brother. And we were actually Christmas shopping, December 23rd, 1995. I know exactly the day. I remember exactly the day this happened. We stopped to eat lunch at this pizza place. And I'd mentioned to him, like, hey, I think I'm Page. I think I might put some more wrestling, I mean, more martial arts in my wrestling stuff and, you know, what I do in the ring. He was like, bro, he said, I'd be good if you knew some of that stuff. And I was like, what do you mean, man? I said, I told him, I was mistaken since I was like, you know, 15, 14 years old. He goes, bro, I didn't know any of that stuff. He goes, you know, Eric's into all that. And I was like, of course, I'm cleaning up the conversation on Page's end a lot, just so you know. So, you know, because if you ever heard Page talk, you know, he doesn't say, he uses words like stuff. He uses other S words. but anyway, so he said, well, I gave him all this information. We talked the rest of the day. We went back. He said, well, I'll tell Bischoff about it. So he goes, he tells Eric. And I don't even think that Dallas was aware of the fact that TBS, you know, had been connected to Mortal Kombat because they were looking to do the Mortal Kombat TV show. The movie was a huge hit. Mortal Kombat was a big, big thing at this time. And so, when he said, yeah, okay, I want to talk to him. So we really met right after the holidays. It was the first week of January. And there was a little restaurant right outside their neighborhood. And yes, for the people that have heard the stories, I can confirm Bischoff and Dallas really did live about 3 houses down from each other. And I went to this little steakhouse. I think it was like a Longhorn Steakhouse maybe. And he had a table in the back. I walked back in the back. I sit with him. Long story short is we ended up having like a 3-hour meeting. And at the end of it, he said, just so you know, and I'm giving you the very brief, you know, version of this. He just says, I want to sign you to a deal with WCW. And, you know, after I picked my jaw up off the floor, you know, I said, okay. And he said, let me ask you something. Are you still wrestling on the independent circuit? And I said, yes, sir, I am. He says, here's what I want you to do. He said, I want you to cancel all your bookings and just disappear from the independent wrestling scene I don't want you to give anybody a reason, just disappear. Cancel all your bookings. We'll go ahead and get you under the contract. And he goes, I just want to, you know, get you locked in. And I have some big ideas. And of course, at this point, we were a long way from deciding on the name Glacier and what actually I would look like and all that. But yeah, the reason why I always say is the reason I'd gone, I'd wrestled in Japan. I'd gotten to know Luthez. I had really, I really had leaned on Luthez a lot for advice over the years, and he became a great friend and mentor, like he was to a lot of people. But he's the greatest wrestler that ever lived, you know. And so I had some great resources. Fred Avery, my trainer, you know, I got his advice on things. And I was training with Dallas. You know, everybody, like I said, I'm not the smartest guy in the world, Lee, but I was smart enough to move to Atlanta to chase my dream. I got a teaching job to pay the bills. And I joined Main Event Fitness, which was owned by Lex and Sting at the time. So, you know, I put myself in the world of the wrestlers. I went to where the opportunity was. And I tell people all the time, sometimes you got to move to where the opportunity is. If it's not in your area, if you want to chase this dream realistically, sometimes you got to go to where the opportunities are. And that's what I did. And so I can honestly say I did the work. I was proud of the fact that I was ready. I knew I was ready. And I was ready a couple years before that, I felt, but I had to be patient because, like I said, the one thing I've learned in the wrestling business, if you're chasing this dream, one thing you can almost for sure bank on is it's not going to have, the break's not going to happen on your timeline. You know, I've learned that no matter how much you think it might. And for those chosen few, maybe it does. But for most of us, you know, it's going to happen when the stars align for whatever reason. And, you know, Dallas always says, give me talent, give me experience, or give me timing. I'll always take timing. And it was good timing. I was ready. I was whatever Eric was looking for, he saw in me. And I was ready, and I knew I was ready. And so I was, even though I was in that meeting, I was still humble. I was very, very confident that whatever they were needing, I was their guy. And he signed me. And I remember when he asked me to do it, he said, I want you to disappear from the wrestling scene. I said, I can do that. And I did that. And that started the journey of Glacier. There's a whole long story of all the stuff that came, you know, that happened once that got happened, that all started rolling. I will say this, you know, as with anything in wrestling, very rarely in the wrestling business does anyone, you know, there's those rare people like Sting and Ricky Steamboat, who, you know, just everybody loved them, you know, but there's only a chosen few of those, you know. And I look at John Cena as an example. I'm a big fan of John Cena, but you know, when he goes into the arena, there's still half the arena that seems to, you know, not really want to cheer for him for whatever reason, you know. And he's still laughing all the way to the bank, you know. But the thing is, you know, there was a lot of harsh criticism from some people. Not a lot, but I mean, there were some from people because, you know, they're old school wrestling people that didn't understand where they were going with the whole blood runs cold thing and all that, or you just didn't like it. And I get that. It was the first time I think I had to deal with openly tough criticism that I was taking very personally when I realized it wasn't personal to me, Ray Lloyd. It was personal. Maybe they just didn't like the gimmick. But I can tell you this, Lee, over the years, and you and I've talked about this off camera, is the overwhelming majority of the people that I've ran into over the years, really, really enjoyed what I did as Glacier. I'm very, very proud to be Glacier. I'm very proud that I've 25 years and going strong. I'm doing an appearance at Daytona Comic Con this weekend, Saturday and Sunday, with my good friend John Crowther, who does a whole line of comic books for wrestlers. And you know, it's I say with a lot of pride. Were there a few things that I would like to have seen done differently? Of course, you know, but ask any wrestler, you know, that question, they'll tell you there's things they wish that would happen differently in their career. Yeah. But for the most part, the one thing that I've always been someone, and Dallas was one that really accentuated this with me about being a positive person. You know, I remember one of my favorite things that Dallas taught me was you can always, always control how you react to things. And there's, you know, there was, so as far as I'm concerned with the whole Glacier gimmick, you know, it's a very real part of me and who I am. I can snap into being Glacier in a second because it's another layer of actually who I am. It doesn't fall too far from who I am as a person. But also, you know, it's a gimmick that as I get older, I meet wrestling stars of today that I find were fans when they were younger, when they were 10 and 12 years old. And I can tell you right now, nothing thrills me more than that. It really does. And to know that that there were people, like I always say, just to know that there were people who enjoyed the gimmick for what it was during a hard time to do that because of all the reality-based stuff that really, you know, took off with NWO and all that. You know, but I always say the one thing I'm most proud of is the fact that I was signed for January of 96. And my contract, even though I was really there until the bitter end of April 01, my contract ran out a couple months before, but I was still kind of being paid on a per match basis as they were using me. There were plans for me to come in and be a coach at the power plant from a recommendation from Paul Orndorff, which was huge at the time. So that was my next career move, was actually to transition into a coach at the power plant and still do Glacier on TV when they needed me. But I always say I was fortunate enough and so thankful to be at the show when it really was the show. And all 5 years, for better or for worse, all 83 weeks, you know, however you want to say it, you know, when we were number one in the ratings, you know, I was there, and you know, I, the conversations I've had with Bischoff over the years, I mean, I can proudly tell you, you know, like Dallas, you know, says I earned my spot every week for those 5 years, and very, very proud of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, you brought up that you were going to transition to coach at the power plant.
Yeah.
And now you're with QT Marshall and the Nightmare Factory there, right, which is, you know, has the tie to AEW. And you did say that you're getting ready to take bookings again and everything.
Yeah.
Could we ever see you step foot in an AEW ring and wrestle?
Well, I'll just say this much right now, Lee. The hip is feeling really, really good. And so, you know, my hip was bothering me for the last several years. And even when I did the appearance at the pay-per-view a couple years ago out in Vegas, it was Double or Nothing. I was really trying to hide the fact that I was in a lot of pain in my right hip, but that's been fixed. I'm getting around really good. I mean, I still have maybe a little bit of time to go to get back to where it's absolutely 100%, but I certainly hope so. I really do, because a lot of my friends obviously are in AEW, and I'm still very close and connected with the company, obviously, just because of my relationship with QT and with Cody, even though they're kind of button heads these days still, you know. Yeah. But you know, there's always, as I always say, there's those times when throughout my whole life, throughout all of our lives, I've had friends that were button heads before. It doesn't mean I can't be friends with both of them.
Yeah.
But yeah, so runs, I certainly hope to make an appearance in AEW at some point. I really do.
Awesome. You know, with Blood Runs Cold, it was you, Wrath, Brian Clark, Mortis, Chris Canyon, Ernest Miller. I don't know if you realize this or not, but your first loss as Glacier came in Dutchland, actually, against Chris Canyon, Mortis. How was the fan perception there of Glacier and Mortis?
And that was over in Germany? When we were in Germany, is that right? Or what was that?
Dutchland, yeah.
Was that in the States, or was that over?
No, it was during the WCW, I think it was called Christmas Brawl.
Oh, okay.
Of 90.
I'm trying to think.
Of 97? 96. It was December 96.
Yeah, that's you know, one of the things that that a lot of people don't know is that in December of 96, we actually, Mortis and I, Chris Canyon, WCW sent us on a tour of Germany. We had the whole group went. It was Bagwell, it was Lex, Eddie, Chris Benoit, Harlem Heat, you know, we actually over there, that was when we actually went back and forth, wins and losses over there, you know. And my first singles match on TV was a loss was to Bagwell on Nitro. I forget when that was, but I can tell you this, you know, Mortis and I, Chris Canyon, we went back and forth all the time. And, you know, I always had a great saying that I used to say about Canyon was, best friends, better enemies, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I always compared our relationship to that old cartoon that used to come on with the Bugs Bunny stuff in the morning, where the sheepdog and the coyote would walk to work and punch in, and then the coyote would spend the whole day getting beat up by the sheepdog trying to get to the sheep, and then they clock out and walk home together. Like, that's kind of how it was being good friends with Candy. we went out there, man, we beat the stew out of each other. But we always worked really hard, and we really, really cared about having really good matches for the fans. I'm really, really big on that. I mean, I don't care. I always say I wrestle in front of 40 people and I wrestle in front of 40,000. And I can say without reservation, I gave them all the same effort, because I just feel I'm a fan first. And one of the many lessons I learned from Luthez was when he said that, you know, people tend to sometimes when you get in front of a smaller audience, people tend to not maybe give their all. And I just remember he always said something that really stuck with me. He said, if you're wrestling in front of 50 people, it's not those 50 people's fault that it's not sold out. They did their part. They deserve your best every night. And I've always looked at it that way, you know. And but me and Canyon, I can't tell you how many times I, you know, got my hand raised with him and how many times he beat me. But we kicked and punched each other a whole lot back in the day.
Are you going to watch his Dark Side of the Ring episode that they're doing on him? on Vice.
I will watch it. I will watch it only because I can tell you I'll watch it for one reason. And the only reason I really want to watch it is because I really hope that they do his legacy justice. You know, he was a great guy. He was tremendously talented, I miss him every day. I really do. A lot of my good friends were interviewed for that episode. And I was told that they were going to contact me. They never really did. But I can tell you without reservation, I would not have gone on camera and talked about it, because I just learned over the years that sometimes, and I'm not saying this is with what Dark Side of the Ring would do, but I just learned sometimes that people chop things up and take things out of context. And I love and respected Chris so much and his legacy that I didn't want to take a chance on that happening. So I really hope they do his legacy justice. I really do. And my buddy Luther Biggs and I, we talk every day, and we literally honor Chris Canyon every single day with some type of phrase that we still say or his memory. And that's what I really choose to do to keep his memory alive, is just say he had some of the best sayings in that New York accent that you could possibly say, some of the funniest stuff and stuff that wouldn't be funny unless you put Chris Canyon's accent on it. I just hope they do his legacy justice. I really do, because he deserves that. And I so wish he were here today for a lot of reasons, just selfishly because, you know, I miss my friend, you know, but I know he would have a place today somewhere at NXT or AEW or Impact. He would have a place somewhere, and he'd be really celebrated for his contributions to the business, and which he is now. But I even more so, I think if he were here, I think he would have found a great place in the business that where they would have really appreciated what his experience and his knowledge and his passion for the wrestling business. I mean, man, he loved pro wrestling.
Yeah, I agree. And I loved watching his transition from Mortis to Canyon and doing the who's better than Canyon.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, yeah. His transition, and it was so smooth too, how it worked for him. It was just, just amazing.
Very dedicated, very dedicated. Brian Cage, you know, still does a little bit of the, you know, tribute to Canyon when he does the who better, you know, stuff, I think is absolutely awesome. You know, that someone chooses to just do a little bit to keep his memory alive. You know, I think that's really awesome.
Yeah, I agree. And you see a lot of wrestlers, you know, doing that with, you know, for other wrestlers nowadays too.
Yeah.
Like I remember Ryback did an Owen Hart spot on a microphone during like the Slammy Awards. And he was like, well, enough's enough. It's time for a change. And then he, you know, walk to the ring type deal. And like, I always love stuff like that, because it gives like a nostalgia factor, but, you know, paying tribute as well. It's nice to see.
Yeah, absolutely.
And earlier you said that, you know, maybe some fans didn't like the whole Blood Runs Cold thing, but later on when, you know, these meet and greets and stuff that you're at, and even wrestlers that are in the business now, you know, come up to you about the character.
Oh yeah.
Having you said that, how were you contacted to be part of the Ring of Honor, the Honor Rumble in 2017? And how did it feel when, you know, the smoke hit and you were coming out and the music and the crowd went nuts?
Well, you know what? First thing, it's hard to believe that that's been over 3 years now. You know, I mean, it really, time really flies. As I get older, I realize time flies even faster. It really does. But I got to thank QT Marshall. You know, QT and I started the school together about, now it's been over 4 years, about 4.5 years ago. We've been in the location of my mentor, Chip Smith, his performance center in Atlanta. November will be 4 years. And we have a beautiful 43,000 square foot world-class facility at, you know, world-class elite athletes like, you know, Major League Baseball, NBA, mostly NFL players train there. So our trainees get a chance to really, you know, train alongside some of the best in the world. But we actually brought in, QT was doing some work with Ring of Honor. Of course, Cody had was coming in doing some, and we had Hunter, who was doing head of talent. gosh, what's this? What's what he wears his mask? What does he go as? I don't know what I know it, but my memory's so bad with names. but anyway, the head of talent, for Ring of Honor called me and he just said, like, hey, like QT and I were talking, like, you know, we do the Honor Rumble and like we always try to throw in, you know, a couple surprises, and you know, we think it'd be kind of cool if, you know, if we had you come in, you know, like near the end of the Rumble. And I said, wow, well, first of all, I was just honored. I was honored and humbled that they would even think of me. And that they would think that much of me, you know, to want to let me be a part of something like that. Cause it was at Center Stage, which once again is, in my opinion, kind of hallowed ground for wrestling. And so I agreed to do it. And honestly, you and I had talked about this before. I was pretty reluctant because, you know, I had not been on major TV in a long time, especially at pay-per-view. And I just didn't know how people would respond. I really didn't. And so, I'm standing back there, you know, and they're getting ready to hit my music. And man, I was nervous. I was really, really nervous because I was thinking, you know, wrestlers don't mind hearing cheers and don't mind hearing boos, but the worst sound we can ever hear is crickets, you know?
Yeah.
And so I was like, well, I just hope this goes off good, you know? And thank God it did. It really did. And I the Ring of Honor fans, I can't, I've said it over and over, just how truly, truly humbled I was. And it was a lot of fun. I got in there, I did a little bit of what I needed to do, and I got out because, you know, it was the night for the main guys at Ring of Honor to shine, but I was certainly glad to come in and maybe give a little surprise to the match.
Yeah. Yeah. I popped like crazy, just like the crowd did. I thought because it was exactly how you said it on your end. It is kind of how I had thought and felt when I had seen you. I hadn't seen you in so long on mainstream television. You made a couple of appearances on some television shows and stuff, I noticed.
Yeah.
But I mean, aside from like meet and greets and conventions and stuff and indie scene stuff and all of a sudden when the music hit and the smoke and everything, and Ian's going, it's Glacier, and the crowd is chanting and I'm going nuts, and oh my God, it was amazing to see that. It was just, it was really cool. So it was a really exciting thing to see. Cause like, you know, you had said, you know, yeah, there might've been some people that weren't fans of the Blood Runs Cold, but you've had so many people come up to you at meet and greets and stuff.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Love the character and everything. And I loved it. Yeah. So I thought it was a great spot. I loved it.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. And I just, as getting older in my mind and my memory slipped, Delirious was, you know, the head, you know, with our Ring of Honor was the one who also talked to him. Delirious. So Delirious, I'm sorry. I forget my own name sometimes. So, you know, because especially at that time, they had a ton of talent in Ring of Honor during that time. And they still do. But it was a very special moment because Cody was there, you know, doing commentary. And like I said, you know, he had gone to bat for me. QT had gone to bat for me. Delirious. It was a lot of fun. It was very humbling. I love being able to be a part of, you know, surprises like that, especially when they go good.
Yeah. Well, that one went great. Speaking of surprises, we have a surprise here for our fans tonight. You have something that's very special that you have been working on. We off camera and everything, we have spent quite a bit of time talking about it, and I want to talk about it today. You have a new movie coming out.
Yeah. I tell you what, it has been, it feels like it's been my life's work, you know, it is, and you know, I'm going to repeat a lot of things that you and I have already talked about in our phone calls off camera. My best buddy from the wrestling business, and obviously one of my best buddies in and out of wrestling, Luther Biggs. We met at the power plant back in '96, and we've been great friends ever since. Probably 10, 12 years ago, we both were sitting around. And we always had talked about, we're both big fans of film. We've both done some work in film. Luther actually was in the Jesse Ventura movie back in the day. He played one of the wrestlers in that movie. It was a made-for-TV movie. And we started talking, and we were like, you know, like most movies, you know, paint wrestling in a bad light, or as I always say, they paint wrestlers either as buffoons or foul-mouthed degenerates or both. And you know, does our business have that? Yes, just like every business does. but you know, rarely do you see pro wrestling really celebrated in a really positive light. And you know, and so we came up with an original concept. He came up with a great original concept that eventually evolved into more of an ensemble cast type story. And so what we ended up with was a action adventure sci-fi film that is whenever you hear any pitches about new stories in the film industry, they always say it's this meets this, you know. And so we're both big fans of those, you know, ensemble movies of the 60s and 70s, like The Magnificent Seven, the Dirty Dozen, The Wild Bunch, you know. And a better example of a modern day example of that is like The Expendables, ensemble cast where you have several legendary actors, performers, in our case, professional wrestlers in those roles. We're like, you know, this has never really been done before. And so we were like, we're just the guys to do it, you know? So we set out, it's been now about, gosh, it's been about 6 years ago, and we finally got our great friend John Waterhouse finally wrote the original draft of the script, and it's going through several name changes, and it's going through a lot of edits. We ended up going through several writers to get the story we finally wanted, and of course, Luther and I ended up adding a lot of our writing ideas to the story to really just get it to where we wanted. But what we've settled on is a movie called The Unbreakable Bunch, and very family friendly, like I said, action sci-fi film. And it's really, I always say, it's like The Magnificent Seven or The Expendables meets They Live, John Carpenter's They Live that starred Roddy Piper. And that was what we decided to do. So it's pro wrestlers versus aliens, if you want to break it down. it's as fun as it sounds, hopefully. We really have worked hard to make a great family-friendly movie that, as I told you, our editor, when he did the first pass on the footage, he called me up and he said, wow, Ray, he said, this was like a good old Saturday night beer and pizza movie. And I said, well, that's kind of what we're going for, you know?
Yeah.
And it's called The Unbreakable Bunch. We hope we're in shooting some of the final pickup shots right now, even. And because obviously with COVID, we started in the fall of 2019. We had to go on hiatus for a year and a half, really, to wait to get back to starting the film again. And we've just been able to kind of get little pickup shots here and there to fill in those holes on the stuff we didn't have. And, we're still trying to get a little bit more wrestling footage and stuff like that, but we're pretty much in full post-production. Hopefully we'll have a screening copy by the end of the year. And we really, hopefully we'll be in full-fledged promotions to really, put this thing out into the world, hopefully around the first of the year.
Yeah. And the Unbreakable Bunch, great name.
Yeah.
And I've read the plot and we've talked a lot. Yeah. The cast itself is really amazing too. We have you as Jock Holliday. We have Ernest the Cat Miller as Mac Brown.
Yeah.
Luther Biggs as Burnin' Love. We have Tonga. I'm sorry, I don't want to pronounce your last name wrong, but we have
Fafita. King Tonga. Yeah.
Yep. We have King as King Tonga.
The mighty King Tonga.
Larry Sabisco is Legend.
Yes. Yes.
We have
pretty easy to call him that. So.
Yeah. Absolutely. Stan Hansen as Harry the Hammer Jennings, Diamond Dallas Page as Padre. Also have a former world boxing champion, Pinklin Thomas, David Heath, as everyone knows as Gangrel, and former NWA champion, the Tokyo Monster, Kagus.
Yeah,
sorry, I didn't want to pronounce his name wrong.
And there are a lot of other wrestlers in the movie. We actually have kept some as, you know, good surprise cameos that will be coming up. But it is we went out and like I said, we got Pinklin Thomas, one former world heavyweight boxing champion, that came along right before the Mike Tyson era, and he lives right here in Orlando. And in the movie, he has a great cameo where he plays like kind of a master of ceremonies for a festival where our characters stop off and enjoy a day off in the movie. And, but yeah, it's a great story Lee, about the beauty of the camaraderie that comes from any like-minded people coming together to do something they love, like a bunch of musicians traveling together, a bunch of actors traveling together, a bunch of pro wrestlers traveling together, which, you know, anybody who's really, who came along, you know, even before my era or even up into my era, you know, you live on the road in the wrestling business. At least we did, you know, not too long ago. And you really start to have what you call your wrestling family, your road family. And so we wanted to show that, that there's a lot of really, there's a real good side to the wrestling business too. Yes, there's all the stuff we hear about and we know, like I said, we got season three of Dark Side of the Ring starting, you know?
Yeah.
And we have The Wrestler, which is a, you know, a great movie. Like I said, Ernest co-starred in that with Mickey Rourke. A great film, but it really does show kind of a, you know, a sad side of our business. And we wanted to make a movie that really celebrated pro wrestling, and most importantly, celebrates the pro wrestling fans, gives them a movie that they can really be proud of. And it's a really fun thrill ride. But I tell you what I'm most proud of with the film is one. We did a SAG film, which is a Screen Actors Guild film, a union film. We really did this right. We didn't just, you know, get some film students together and shoot some, you know, a bad movie. This is a really, really well done film. We have a lot of really great character actors that outside of the pro wrestlers in the movie, for Julie Denton, who plays the female lead, is shared the screen with the likes of Jennifer Aniston and Paul Rudd. I mean, she's an amazing, amazing actress. Adam Minarvich, who plays the kind of slimy promoter in the movie, which he has a great name, Nicodemus Quarles, and Adam is best known for season one of The Walking Dead. Anybody ever was watched The Walking Dead? Carol's character, which is still in, you know, the final season, which now is what, season 12 or whatever. Adam played Carol's abusive husband in season one, which he's been able to have still a huge following all these years later because of the fact that he was such a you know, low down SOB. But he has a tremendous comedic side, and you get to see that in this business. Even though this movie's not necessarily a full blown comedy, the comedy in the movie is played very straight. The humor is played very straight in the movie, a lot like a Burt Reynolds film, some kind of Clint Eastwood type films. Like I always say, the humor is a lot like if you remember the movies Any Which Way You Can, Every Which Way But Loose, was, you know, Clint Eastwood's movies, where the humor is played very straight in the movie. The humor in ours is played very straight too. We didn't want to make these characters look too cheesy or too corny. We wanted to be very real characters, but also very fun loving people too. And so the movie, I will say this to the wrestling fans, we know our audience. This movie is a movie for the wrestling audience. There's a lot of great pro wrestling action in the movie that was shot really well. But there's also there's some good old classic kick and punch fight scenes in the movie, which are very reminiscent of the good old Clint Eastwood, Burt Reynolds type fight scenes. Which is kind of how these guys would be if they got in a good old friendly fight. They wouldn't be doing a lot of Jason Bourne type fighting, you know. But we had an amazing stunt coordinator and stunt crew, Spy Long Nguyen, who's been a great friend of mine for a long time, amazing stunt man and a stunt coordinator, brought in a very, very high level of stunt performers for our movie. A lot of, you know, world-class stunt performers live down here in Central Florida because they work at the theme parks, you know, when they're not doing major films, you know. So we were so fortunate to get a lot of great, unbelievable talent for this movie. Mark Ashworth, who, if anybody saw the remake of The Magnificent Seven with Denzel and Chris Pratt, came out about 3 or 4 years ago. Mark Ashworth plays the role of preacher in the movie in the small town, who has a great role in the movie, has a great, great scene with him and Denzel, you know, and right before the big fight happens in the town. He plays the kind of the crazy guy in the town named Lou in our movie. I mean, there's a lot of great actors. The thing that I think most people are going to be very pleasantly surprised is how well the performances are from the wrestlers as far as their acting performances. Every single one of them, they were handpicked for this, not because, obviously because of their fame, but mainly because I knew the guys that I knew would gel well together, who could work great together and obviously have great chemistry on camera, but also the ones who I knew would take it serious. And if I had a good bit of dialogue for them to learn, I knew they'd show up. They know their lines. Prime example is Larry Zbyszko. I think people are going to be really pleasantly surprised to know to the performance that Stan Hansen gives, but also that Larry gives, and mainly Tonga Fafita, King Haku, you know, Ming in WCW. I'm telling you, they the performance is just, I knew they'd be good, but they really, really blew us away. And when you see them on camera, they were shot really well. They've edited really well. There's a lot of tenderness in this movie that I don't think people are going to expect to see from a bunch of big, tough wrestlers. But it's very much the side of wrestling. If anybody, you know, I always say about Ming is, you know, he's every bit of all the stories you've heard about him. He's definitely that guy, you know. And I always say, you know, there's a great clip of Dwayne Johnson on the Tonight Show talking about when his Uncle Tonga bit a guy's nose off in a restaurant. Yeah, that stuff really happened. But he's also one of the nicest, sweetest, most kindest, giving people you could ever know. And we show that side in the movie too. And I think that's what people are going to be really, really pleasantly surprised to see.
And, you know, I've met Tong and got to, you know, talk to him a little bit. I was going to bring up, man, just between Tonga and Stan, the stories I've heard, those two alone in a fight scene, like, has me like, wait, what?
Yeah.
But now you start adding everybody else in, because you guys all have such incredible backgrounds with pro wrestling and, you know, them, you know, you in earnest with martial arts. And we know Tonga's history now with the biting of the it's an incredible group of guys that you put together. Hence the name, the Unbreakable Bunch is such a fantastic name. When you've done some of these wrestling scenes, did you use like an independent promotion with like their actual fans that were there that paid tickets to be there?
You know, that's a great question. And before I forget, anybody that wants to see the website for the movie right now, Robert McLaren, who is Dallas's DDP's IT guy and a great friend of mine. He actually, as a favor to the project, he did our website for us, and you can go to just unbreakablebunch.com. Unbreakablebunch.com, and you can see a lot of the behind the scenes pictures, and we'll be putting updates as to when, you know, the movie will be completed and get ready, and when it will be coming out and all that. We'll be adding a lot more to the website, but you can see tons of behind the scenes pictures that we took. But what we did mainly was in that 43,000 square foot facility we have in Atlanta, which, as everybody knows that watched AEW last summer, they ended up shooting AEW episodes about 6 weeks worth of TV right at the beginning of the pandemic in our facility where we have our wrestling school, which is Chip Smith's facility. And so we actually created the same thing. We created an arena at the other end of the building. And so we could totally control the wrestling because there's a lot of where we've been able to drop into wrestling shows and actually get some matches. Like just a couple of weeks ago, we did this, me and Luther Biggs and Ming, we actually went in and did a 6-man tag on a live show that Cahagas, the Tokyo Monster Cahagas, had a show in Winter Haven, Florida. And so we got some great montage footage in the movie, like when the characters go on the road, of us at live shows actually doing matches in real time with real crowds. But we did have to, there were a couple of matches where we really did have to shoot it cinematically. So we had to actually stop and start a lot. So we had the greatest experience in Atlanta when we were shooting this at our school. We got a bunch of extras that were there that came in, stayed there all day, and we shot the wrestling scenes. And we had several people that were trainees from our wrestling school that helped us out. I will say this, that there's one actor in the movie that plays a character called Alexander the Great, and you'll see him on the website if you look on our website. Great actor, actually from Marietta, Georgia. Wrestled at Marietta High School. I think the same time Cody was wrestling at Lasker High School. I don't know if they ever wrestled each other, but he does an amazing job. One, he's an amazing actor. He's done a lot of other great films that he's worked on before and since we did ours. But literally, he had one day. He went to the when it was still the One Fall Power Factory. He went in one day and just worked on some basic stuff. And then when we shot, a few days later. I tell you, I mean, he really delivered, and he just showed how much of a professional he was as an actor. That I tell you, I mean, he looks very, very believable as a pro wrestler, and I don't know hardly any pro wrestler that could go in with one day of training and look anywhere close to decent. Me included, you know. So, So Nick came in and did an amazing job. He's an amazing actor, another one of the great actors that's in the movie. But yeah, we staged a lot of it so we could actually stop and start to get the shots we wanted, some slow motion and things like that, to kind of add a little bit of that cinematic quality to it. But we shot a lot of live wrestling too. And we implemented that at certain, like I said, the montages that are put over music to really simulate, so the audience gets to really see a lot of us wrestling, but actually, it moves the story. It moves along with the story too, because there's so much more of the story other than just the wrestling in the movie. And one main thing to really remember about this story is that, you know, the guys in the story or in the movie, they're all characters that are kind of past their prime, except for the young Alexander the Great character. And so when they get thrown into this position, so this basic plot of the story is all these wrestlers, kind of like in the Magnificent Seven, like my character gets all of them together to come together to go on this tour to help somebody they really care about, to raise some money for somebody they really care about. And it's the same thing. There's a it's a ticking clock. I'm gonna say that right. And there's a time limit, like, you know, we got to get this money by a certain date. And so this is the only way we know how to do it, is go back on the road and do what we do best, which is wrestle. In the meantime, there's a parallel story that the viewer sees of this small town in North Florida that suddenly gets overtaken by this alien force. And as it would be, of course, at some point these two worlds cross, and we end up in the small town on a day off in between shows. And then we go to this festival, a big old friendly fight breaks out between us and the volunteer firefighters, and then we end up get thrown in the local jail. The town starts to go haywire. We get busted out of the jail to help the small town. And the fun of the story is that, and the, really the, a lot of the, I think the heart of the story is that we as the characters at this point, we're not really sure, you know, if we can pull this off. 20 years ago, we would have said, heck yeah, let's dive in. But now we're like, wait a minute. Like, you know, we're not those guys anymore. Can we actually do this? So there's a lot of, real hurdles in the story to overcome. And of course, I will say that, like, the things that everybody thinks that they would see in this movie, I promise you they're in there. There's a lot of great pro wrestling. There's a lot of great music. There's a lot of great fight scenes. There's, of course, Tonga and epic fight scenes, which I think everybody would want to see. Stan Hansen definitely does throw the lariat at some point in the movie, which everybody wants to see. And there's gunfire and explosions, which I don't think most people would think they're going to see. And I always say it's one of the things I learned from really researching a lot of directors and making this movie. Hal Needham was always Burt Reynolds' stunt guy. And he's the guy who came up with the concept for the movie Smoking the Bandit. And he had a great philosophy. He always said, you know, action doesn't always have to be violent action. It can still be fun action. And I always equate that to, like, if anybody ever saw the A-Team TV series where there was always gunfire and explosions, but no one ever seemed to really, really get hurt. That's kind of how our action is in this movie. It's real fun action, but there's pro wrestlers fighting aliens. You know, it's like, you know, Ernest Miller has a great line in the movie. He says, you know, pro wrestlers versus aliens sounds like a monster movie. You know, so that's kind of what it is, you know.
I mean, it really sounds like a movie for everybody.
It is. I hope so. I hope that's how people see it. And like I said, Lee, like you and I have talked about, I wanted to put a movie out there that people who are wrestling fans can feel really, really good about. And they can sit down with someone that maybe is not a wrestling fan and say, hey, I want you to watch this. This is, you know, I want them to go get someone else and watch it again. Because I will say this. There are a lot of Luther gives me a hard time about this term, but I'm really, really big on the term, but have, you know, movie having Easter eggs in the movies. And there are a lot of Easter eggs in this movie. And we worked really, really hard to put some Easter eggs in there for wrestling fans that, like a good Disney movie does, that if you're not a fan of wrestling, you might not get it, but it won't affect, you know, you enjoying the movie. But there's some really good surprises in there for fans that if you're a wrestling fan, you'll get it and you'll see it. And I hope you will really love some of the little Easter eggs that are in the movie.
Awesome. Awesome. And Luther, I agree with Ray with the term Easter eggs. No,
I don't know where it came from, but
no, that's really cool though. Cause like anytime you watch a movie or like even a TV show, I'm always like looking for like little hints or something, you know, and the Disney movies do it Very great. And so I'm, when I go to watch this, I'm going to have to watch it like three times right off the bat to see what I pick up after.
There are a lot. I mean, we every time we would start the films and stuff, I think of sometimes, and Luther would think of stuff, and Tonga with and Ernest, everybody would kind of give their input. And there'd be things we'd throw in and we go, you know, that was never even in the script. We would just say, hey, this is kind of great. You know, won't affect the scene as far as what we need to get out of the scene. But if you're a wrestling fan, you might see it and you might be, that's pretty cool. So
awesome. Ray, I want to thank you for coming on today. The last thing I would love for you to do is go ahead and plug anything and everything from the website movie again, any social media you have, any social media that fans can go for the movie, your podcast, Breaking the Ice with Ray Lloyd, which is an awesome show, everybody.
Yeah.
So go, the floor is yours.
Yeah. Well, I will say this. I'm mainly, you know, as you know, I'm the older guy, so I'm mainly on Facebook. You know, I'm trying to get, but I am on Instagram, and I'm trying to kickstart my Twitter account again. I kind of got locked out of it. So I got to call them and get it, you know, kind of where I can get that going again. But yeah, I would say for anybody, just please follow me on Facebook on my personal page, which is just Ray Lloyd. I'm going to be probably kicking my fan page up again, which is Glacier Ray Lloyd. But because I got a lot of interesting stuff that I'm going to be announcing here soon. I'll kind of cover some of it here. Of course, the film is our heart and soul, and it's just unbreakablebunch.com. So you go to our website, you can see all the updates and everybody, all the cast, and a lot of behind the scenes pictures from when we shot the principal photography back, back in 2019. And we tried to add newer pictures as we get them, but one of the things that I'm also going to be doing here in the very near future is making a big major announcement. I'm getting ready. One of the things I've seen the need for, and there's some people that are doing this right now, which I think is great, is because I'm all for anything that helps the wrestling business. And I'm getting ready to make some big major announcements about doing some online coaching, and some that is for the wrestling community, but also some is just for wrestling fans who, who can maybe just benefit from a lot. I'm going to be sharing a lot of the life lessons that I learned from the pro wrestling business and how I applied them to other areas of my life, and things that I think that might really help, especially aspiring pro wrestlers who are, as I call, the dreamers. And I proudly put myself in the category of being a dreamer, is, you know, I've walked that walk. I've gone down that journey of trying to be a professional wrestler at the top level. I know what it takes. I know that it takes someone believing in you, supporting your dream, supporting your journey. And I know a lot of young wrestlers out there just don't have a lot of that. And so that's a big reason why I've decided to start here in the near future, in about a month or so. And I'll be putting it on my Facebook page, the exact date when I'm going to be launching this, but is to start a community of sorts, to where membership type community, where aspiring pro wrestlers, they know they can come, male and female. Also, you know, referees, managers, valets, announcers, anyone connected to the wrestling business who's chasing this dream, to know there's somewhere you can go that you can trust the information you're getting is honest and accurate information. I always say, I don't know it all, but I know a lot about the pro wrestling industry. And I know just about everybody that is somebody in this business. And I just feel like there needs to be a good, supportive, safe community where people can go chase that dream realistically and know they're going to be supported. So that's another thing I'll be making some big announcements about here real soon. And then my podcast co-partner and co-pilot, Avi Klein, we're revamping right now the Breaking the Ice with Glacier podcast. I'm going to make some announcements on my Facebook page about that coming up real soon. We're getting ready to fire that back up here really, really soon. So yeah, I got a lot of things going on, but definitely, guys, keep your eyes and ears open for, and of course, Lee, I know, obviously, I'll be keeping you updated as far as the film, but unbreakablebunch.com, guys, check it out. And I think you're going to love it when it comes out. Just know, if you're a wrestling fan, this movie, the blood, sweat, and the tears we went through, was all for you, to give you something you can be proud of.
Absolutely. Ray, thank you again for coming on the show. And as you said, please keep me updated on the movie. Definitely, ladies, bud, and gentlemen, remember, spoiler freeze, the way to be. We're out.
Here in America, work is in trouble. We've offshored our manufacturing, sent away good jobs, and lost so much ability to make things. American Giant is a company that's pushing back against this tide. They make high-quality clothing, sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more, right here in the USA. visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, promo code STAPLE20.